Good afternoon, and calling State Affairs to order at 3:08 p.m. Thursday, April 22, 2021, in the Max Gruenberg Room at the Capitol. And members present from my left to my right are Representatives Vance, Tarr, Kaufman, Story, Clayman, and myself, Chair Christ Tompkins, giving us six members present and therefore a quorum to conduct business. As always, thanks to Sophia, who I believe is online like an angel in heaven recording all of our records, and we have Tom in the back of the room facilitating from the LIO. For today, we're going to have a continuation of the confirmation hearing for Commissioner Designee Cockrell from the Department of Public Safety. Really appreciate you being back and, of course, your time on Tuesday, and I know the committee really appreciated that as well. And then from there, we're going to take up House Bill 63 for a final time, and we have a CS which has since been distributed. That's version O. We'll adopt the CS, go over the changes and how those correspond to all the amendments that were adopted in committee, and Mr. Stepp will help connect the dots there, and then we'll consider the outstanding amendments which were set aside and that have now been drafted conforming to the new committee substitute. And from there, hopefully time allowing, we'll take up House Bill 123 as well as House Bill 148 in that order and look to the will of the committee for possible discharge, having received no amendments for either piece of legislation by the amendment deadline. So that's what we have in store. But let's start with the first item. Commissioner Designee Cockrell, if you're able to join us, thank you for making the time and coming back to committee.
You're welcome. I'm to Chair Christ Thompson, Vice Chair Clayman. For the record, my name is James Cockrell, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Public Safety, and I currently live in Soldotna and work out of the Anchorage office and part-time here in Juneau. I was going to ask for a brief, I guess, opening statement, but I think I'm going to not ask for that, but I do like to, wanted to thank the members for the thoughtful questions last week. I certainly went back to my hotel room, woke up in the middle of the night to kind of debrief my answers to the questions. And, you know, I think it's really important that the legislature and legislators have open dialogue with state government and especially Department of Public Safety, because we are such an important department and we touch so many lives around the state of Alaska. And I just wanted to thank you for the questions, and if there's ever any follow-up questions, you can certainly get a hold of me. And hopefully, I don't know that we'll make this an annual event, but I'll make myself available for other committee meetings.
I think we'd be happy to make it an annual event, and I mean I think it would be a virtuous dialogue between executive branch and the legislative branch, your agency, and this committee. And I think probably the subject of a lot of interest. Just in terms of questions in the queue, I had a couple that started spilling over from the last meeting, and one is if you could speak to your assessment of morale in the agency right now. And I think in your opening comments you sort of spoke to just sort of righting the ship might have been a metaphor that was invoked, but just kind of getting things back on a steady state. And what's your perception of morale in the agency, and what do you think, you know, needs to change if you're confirmed?
Through the chair, you know, morale is always a hard thing to judge, especially when you got law enforcement officers around the state of Alaska. I will say one of the reasons I think I explained, one of the reasons I came back was because of the, I would call it almost outpouring of members of the department asking me to at least consider me coming back. So I took that as a real positive sign based on, you know, and again, I haven't spent any time out in the field yet because I haven't had the opportunity, but based on the number of emails that I've received from department members throughout the state, you know, I think there's a sense of hope that, you know, we will stay on track. And again, I'm real supportive of my director staff, my two colonels, and they certainly have a better gauge of what's out there. But bottom line, I think that I think leadership has a big role in morale, and I'm hoping with me coming back with my my connections to the field and to the grant staff that morale is improves. Not to say that it was, I can't say if it was bad or good. I'm not trying to compare myself to the previous commissioner. But anyway, I'm excited to be back, and I think the department's excited that I'm back.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins, and thank you for coming back again today. State jobs, including those within the Department of Public Safety, are an important part of our community and economy here in Juneau. My constituents are concerned when they see jobs moving from the Capitol without good cause and sometimes to the detriment of efficient and effective government. Can you commit to keeping jobs in Juneau unless there's a justifiable reason to move them?
Through the chair, Representative Story, I had this conversation a little bit earlier with the other representative from Juneau, and he asked me the same question. I will say I have no plans of moving any commission employees from Juneau. We've got a big contingent of wildlife troopers here, and we've got our state troopers are signed here. We've got a sergeant, I think four troopers plus our CSOs. So I can commit to the fact that there's no plan in place to remove any commission troopers or support staff to the detachments. I will say that we currently have the director of the Alaska Police Standards Council, his position, he's retiring in July. We will be putting his position on Workplace Alaska. And we've left the option open to either have the office or that position in Anchorage or Juneau, depending on our candidate pool. Our preference would be to keep it in Juneau, but if we can't get a viable candidate that meets our requirements, because you know the Alaska Police Standards Council is an important position, the director's position. They oversee training for all law enforcement. They also license all or certify all police officers, and they can also take the certification away from a police officer because of misconduct. So other than that position, that's the only position I know currently. And again, well, there's no plan to move any other positions out of Juneau.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you that you're going to look to fill that position here first, if possible.
If possible, it's certainly our plan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? One other question, Commissioner Designee, from me, especially given your history with Alaska Wildlife Troopers, is how you, as commissioner, would think about the sort of appropriate ratio between state troopers and wildlife troopers in different parts of Alaska, and how do you approach that sort of allocation of resources question? And I'll just sort of provide a little bit of anecdotal context in that I think especially in rural Alaska, I know certainly in my district, Cake being a community in particular, there's I think sort of a simmering frustration that, you know, it can be hard to get state trooper support when there's a murder in the community, which unfortunately there has been, very tragic and sort of gratuitous violent murders that sort of broke the hearts of a lot of people over the last 6-7 years. And sometimes that's just sort of beyond anybody's control because of weather access and ability to access a small remote community. But then that just gets juxtaposed with, you know, somebody taking a moose and there's a technical violation or next thing they know, there's a wildlife trooper that was like, you know, in the woods sort of in wait and sort of a frustration of like, we can't get support after there's been a murder in the community. And then, you know, someone maybe makes an innocent mistake and gets cited and just feeling like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, doesn't feel like the sort of appropriate allocation of resources. And I realize there's a lot of reasons that can be the impression that is, but I was wondering if you could sort of speak to how you think about that ratio of resources, especially in rural Alaska.
through the chair, I think right now we'll focus on Southeast Alaska, and if you want to move further up the state of Alaska, we can certainly do that. You know, because I've done both. I've been wildlife trooper and an Alaska state trooper, and certainly overseen both divisions. Most of my time in the colonel position was in with the Alaska state troopers. However, I did it at one point oversee both divisions for about 8 months as the colonel. There's certainly, you know, there's a mission need for the wildlife troopers. I mean, the state of Alaska has billions of dollars industry when it comes to guiding and fishing in this state, and especially Southeast. Probably if you count the number of troopers in Southeast Alaska, there are probably more wildlife troopers than there are, I'll call blue shirt Alaska state troopers. And so there's I'll call it a balance. We do expect our wildlife troopers to investigate criminal crimes when they're in the areas or if they're closest resources in the areas, because a lot of times the wildlife troopers have the vessels, the airplanes to respond to Cake, Angoon, or some of the other villages and communities that you have here. And there's an expectation from the department, and there always has been an expectation. They wear Alaska State Trooper badges. They wear the Alaska State, they're called their Class A uniforms, or blue, just like mine were. There's an expectation that they step up, and they have. I mean, we depend on, I mean, we, as I'm, like, I'm the colonel, I'm not the colonel anymore. The AST side of the house depends on the wildlife troopers for, again, for transportation, for like search and rescues, and also to help out in investigations of criminal offenses. And that can be from a homicide down to a misdemeanor assault in one of the villages. We still have to protect their overall mission, because again, I can get this, and I understand there's a difference between crimes against people and crimes against wildlife and fish, and at all times crimes against people are at a higher degree than wildlife or fish any day, and there's not one wildlife trooper that would say anything different, or any AST trooper that would say anything different. And I would be totally disappointed if we had a wildlife trooper fail to investigate a criminal crime when he or she was the only person there. That would be unacceptable now, and it was unacceptable before. And I don't foresee that changing. I do think, as a department, we can utilize our resources a little bit better when it comes to the distinction between the wildlife troopers and the Alaska State Troopers, especially in, not so much here, but in some of the areas of the state in the wintertime, when there's a little bit more discretion time for the wildlife troopers, I think they can cross over into the AST side to help out when needed. But I will tell you, if there's a line that if we're not careful, I mean, we'll certainly get disgruntled folks because we're not providing the protection needed for our wildlife resources, and also Department of Fish and Game, the Board of Fish and Board of Game will let us know that we're neglecting our wildlife. There's approximately, I think there's like just under 100 wildlife trooper positions in the state, and that includes their command staff down. I think right now they probably have around 80. So if you look at the state as large as ours and the number of resources that we have in our state, I mean, and compare it to any other state in the nation, we're not even close, the number of, if you want to call it, game wardens, as any other state. But that doesn't negate the fact that we do expect them to stand up and take criminal cases when the need arises. And again, it's my job to ensure that with both colonels that we're balancing that. And when the AST side needs assistance, that we bring in the wildlife troopers to help augment that assistance.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Commissioner-designee Cockrell. Looking at your resume, your core skills come from your public service, you know, in the troopers, and et cetera, well, mostly the troopers. But as I look, you have some private sector experience as well, where you took those skills, went out into the private sector. I'm just curious, is any lessons learned from that, from the private sector, that may inform how you go about your job as commissioner? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Coffin, that's actually a really good question. During, I guess, my break of service with the Alaska State Troopers, I first went into private security as a security captain overseeing the ConocoPhillips facility and Kenai, the Tesoro plant, and then also was this with the Marathon / Tesoro, because we were Tesoro first. I was the security manager for the Tesoro refinery assets, or the Kenai asset. You know, I think the biggest thing that I've taken from there is their safety culture, and I've found that I used that when we were building a foundation, when we lost the Halo 1 crash, and we had to restructure the aircraft section and try to change the culture that we had with our pilots, because I was a pilot for several years with the department, and there was some that, you know, if you crash or you wreck an airplane, your reward would be the propeller or something like that, and you know that's really unacceptable because you're rewarding bad decisions. And most airplane crashes that can be fatal, like the Halo 1 crash, I'm not saying that was because of bad decisions, but most of them are result of bad decisions. And so I think, based on, you know, what I learned in the private industry, is how important safety is, but not only safety, but the culture of safety, and not just saying that you want to be safe, that you actually practice that in your work. And as an agency, that we let everybody know that we expect you to operate in a safe manner. Because in law enforcement, when you talk about safety and you're drilled this from the day you walk into the academy, it's officer safety, not the fact that you might slip and fall as you walk out of the patrol car. And that's where a lot of our injuries are not related to, you know, fighting somebody like we had last week in Anchorage, but it's more trips and falls and stuff that we should be able to prevent. And we should be, you know, kind of practicing, preaching that when we send our troopers through the academy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Representative Vance, this might be our last question before we go to public testimony as well.
All right, thank you. I have a more practical question. I've done a couple of trooper ride-alongs, and one of the things that I noticed in my very first is that there was hardly any room in the front seat for me. There was a bunch of antiquated computer and printers and all kinds of stuff that had to be adapted to the patrol car, and he ended up picking up an arrest, and the arrest happened in Inelchik. We had to drive to the Homer police station, and it took a long time to make a simple arrest because the printer didn't work, and then the card didn't read in the prison and in the jail, and I thought, you know, we're keeping this trooper from doing very productive work that the public thinks that he should be out visible, because on the lower peninsula it's usually one man on at a time, due to the failure of having the proper equipment to be able to do his job. So that was a couple years ago. Do you know if there have been improvements to be able to meet these basic needs of providing for the troopers, and what do you plan on doing to just meet the basic things to help them do their job?
Through the chair, Representative Vance. Well, I haven't been in one of the new cars here recently, but like any agency, and even in the private sector, one of the things that we struggle with is our computers, our IT. I'll call it our specialized IT equipment, and it's no different than in, you know, the cars. You know, when I left Colonel, I basically, most all our cars had in-car cameras. Well, there's a replacement rate when it comes to in-cars, and we're back into a routine of starting to replace them and update it to the next technology, because technology changes so quickly anymore. and it costs a lot of money. And if you look in the car, I don't know if you were in a expedition or explorer or one of our Tauruses, probably an explorer down there. By the time we get all our equipment, and we very seldom do we ride two people in a car. We usually, if we respond with two cars and not one. That way, if we have to go to another call, we just can't leave the trooper there without a car. So we very seldom have a person in the passenger seat. And if you look, fortunately, you didn't go in the back seat because, you know, that's hard plastic and there's not a lot of room back there. We are changing. We're going to upgrade our fleet from our Explorer levels to the Tahoes. They're going to be a little bit bigger, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more room. But when you look at outfitting that car with everything in it, from the purchase of the vehicle to all the lights and stuff in the radar and you know, for they can do the automatic tickets and stuff, we probably got over $50,000 in the car at least. Just so it gets really expensive. And again, you have to keep updating the equipment. And that's one thing I'm not saying we don't do good at, but you know, we plan for it, but everything again is cyclic, because every year we have to come to the legislature and ask for money, and it depends on where we're at budget wise throughout the state. I'm not complaining about, you know, the legislature, because you have to you certainly have to scrutinize everything that any department spends their money on, but we go through these cycles. I think the bottom line is, I'm trying, it's really hard to plan like a five-year replacement, because we don't know what's going to happen in 5 years. Even a strategic plan, we've had these plans where we spent lots of time saying this is where we want to be in 5, 10, or 15 years, and usually it includes adding more troopers and more support staff, but that is, in 1 year, that could all go away because we're in a bad budget cycle. And like in 2014, I believe, you know, we lost about $10 million in 1 year in the AST component. You know, that's it was just under 10% of our budget. It was, I think, 28 troopers the first time, and then four more troopers to add, 32 in 2 years. So those are some of the challenges that we face, is just trying to get a consistent, I guess, flow where we can actually plan ahead. So, and I'll check on that, see if we're doing better in Homer, Anchor Point, because most people don't realize, you know, even if I'll call it simple because it's not, but a DUI case, that will tie, if we have a trooper arrested DUI, like Anchor Point, and he's got to drive into Homer, depending where it's at, he or she may have to drive him to Wildwood and Nikiskie. I mean, we're tying a trooper up a minimum of 4 hours, because they've got to process them, they got to do the FSTs on them. If the person wants to draw blood, we got to take them to the hospital. And then again, we'll have to, if they're too intoxicated, sometimes the jails don't want to take them. So we can tie a trooper up almost half a shift just on one arrest. And as you probably experienced on your arrest, you got to book them. It just doesn't happen that way. And then that doesn't include that trooper writing his police report to get it to the DA's office for arraignment. So you can eat up almost the whole shift just by depending on the complexity of even a misdemeanor crime.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think at this point we'll go to public testimony. And I want to thank both individuals who are online for their patience of the committee and coming back for the second hearing. So this time I'm going to open public testimony. And first online, we have Ed Mercer here in Juneau. And Chief Mercer, if you can hear us, please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and other committee members. My name is Ed Mercer. I'm currently the Chief of Police here in Juneau, at the Juneau Police Department. I've been in Alaska law enforcement for 28 years, and I currently serve on the Alaska Association Chiefs of Police as a board member. I'm calling today to support the appointment of James Cockrell to the Department of Public Safety Commissioner position. James comes with high integrity, he's a good listener, and he's a good critical thinker, which I believe are all good traits to be a good leader. One of the most important aspects that I found in Jim's character is his team player mentality, as he not only looks out for the Department of Public Safety, but I believe he looks out for all of Alaska's public safety needs. I've had the opportunity to work with Jim when he was the colonel with DPS, specifically in our region down in Southeast Alaska, dealing with drug investigations between our two agencies. And I found, you know, that he truly cares about establishing positive working relationships with law enforcement agencies and other community partners. So I believe Jim understands that we have a very large state with many different needs, and we have to rely on each other to fulfill the mission of public safety in our state. So law enforcement today has many challenges, from recruitment and retention of staff, budget constraints, and building trusting relationships with the public. And I believe, based on James's long tenure with DPS, it's only going to serve him well. It's going to serve the state well, with him moving forward with the agency and keeping him moving forward. And I think he's just going to do an outstanding job. I've always appreciated interacting with Jim, and you know, I think he's going to be great in the position as a commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chief Mercer. Any questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. No questions, but I wanted to thank you, Chief Mercer, for all you do here in Juneau for the community. Thank you.
For the Chair, thank you, Representative Story. I really appreciate it.
Next on the line, we have Dan Spencer, also in Juneau. Mr. Spencer, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Spencer. I am a Juneau, and I am representing myself. I am a former Administrative Services Director for the Department of Public Safety on several occasions, as well as a Statewide Services Director, which handles IT and cars. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, as you have heard from Mr. Cockrell over the last two meetings, he gives thoughtful answers. He has a good understanding of what the issues are confronting the department and the state, and he has a desire to continue to improve policing in the state of Alaska. I completely endorse him. I think he would make is going to make a fine DPS commissioner. I urge the legislature to confirm his nomination. I would like to address the last question that came up about IT in cars, and I will tell you that that over the several years, with some breaks in between, where Mr. Cockrell and I were both at the director level in the department, one of our biggest tensions for a while was how rapidly we could get new IT in vehicles and stood up, and he wanted it faster than I thought we could do it. So if that makes the members feel a little bit better, believe me, he is well aware of those kind of an issue and how they impact both the troopers' ability to do their job as well as get back out and be there for the public. So I encourage you to support his nomination, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spencer, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. Just a comment, and that is thank you, Mr. Spencer, for your many years of service to Alaskans.
Great example of a Juneau-based DPS employee, I might say. Well, that rounds out all those online testify, and I'm fairly confident no one in the room is here to testify in support. So I'm going to close public testimony at this time. And at this point, if there would be any committee comments before we entertain a motion, Representative Tarr.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just also wanted to put on the record that we had these letters of support from North Pole Police Department Chief and Soldatna, Chief of Police as well. And I just think that's pretty great that, you know, the diversity of locations that people are writing in from really shows this statewide support. And I just wanted to share, in addition to the great comments made from the two people that called in, and I really liked how they stressed, you know, your relationships and, you know, sort of the thoughtfulness with which you do your work. And some of the comments in here talk about how caring and understanding you are, how hardworking, what a high level of integrity. So I'm excited that we'll have the opportunity to have you back at the department, I hope, pending your successful confirmation vote. But just really great things being said about the people who have had the opportunity to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Any further comments from the committee? Seeing none, I'm going to indulge in a comment and then turn to a motion from Representative Clayman. I, as Representative Tarr said, really appreciate this confirmation. I'm very excited that you'll be leading this agency. I also think confirmation hearings really matter, and when the legislature fails to do its diligence, it has consequences. And I remember confirmation hearings 2 years ago where I felt we attempted to do our diligence, and I think the history has shown that we failed to some extent. I'm not asking you to comment, but that's pretty clearly my opinion in the matter. And so I think this is a great positive case study of a wonderful confirmation, but I think having this kind of dialogue, getting a sense of your vision is very important, and I'm very grateful you're stepping up to lead the agency.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having completed our comments, The State Affairs Committee has reviewed the qualification of the governor's appointee and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: James Cockrell to Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Seeing and hearing no objection, motion carries. And we will circulate paperwork at the end of the meeting just to allow for a steady flow. Commissioner Designee, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
With the confirmation hearing done, we're on to the next item of business, and we have House Bill 63, and I'll ask Mr. Stepp to come up at his leisure, but as all members have in their possession, we have a committee substitute version O, and at this point, Representative Clayman, if you're ready, can entertain a motion for adoption of the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 63, version 32-LS0286-O, Fisher, 4/20/21 as our working document.
And I'll object for discussion and review of the CS for the benefit of the committee and the public. Welcome, Mr. Stepp. You are intimately familiar with the document in front of us. For that, we are grateful. Would you be able to run the committee through the changes in the CS and, to the extent possible, how each of those changes corresponds to amendments adopted by the committee in the previous hearing for HB 63?
Yes, sir. Thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Stepp, staff to Chair Christ-Hopkins. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I will walk you through just fairly systematically and methodically the amendments that were passed last week. There were 9 amendments with 3 conceptual amendments. And for your pleasure, and if it indulges the chairman, I will just kind of tell you where each of those are at within the bill. So first, the committee adopted Amendment G4 last week. You will find that amendment, which was a amendment by Representative Kaufman, on page 2, lines 10 through 27, beginning with section 19.65.011, relating to short-term and comprehensive plans, includes that entire paragraph to the end of line 27. There was a conceptual amendment in there as well, which requires the plan to be completed every 5 years rather than every 3 years. Moving to the next one, Amendment G5, you will find on page 2, lines 17 through 21. This was in the middle of that paragraph that I referenced a minute ago. And then there are also parts of that amendment that you will see on page 3, lines 12 through 23, relating to the number of members and requirements for those members of the board. Is the pace okay, Mr. Chairman?
This is great.
Okay. Next was Amendment G6, which was amendment number 6. It was adopted without objection as conceptually amended. You will find that on page 4, line 26. That was simply the two words, new subsections, were that part of the amendment. You'll find the rest of that amendment on page 5, lines 2 through 7, beginning with, if the board determines that the Marine Highway System has deviated from a plan, policy, or procedure. This was Representative Kaufman's amendment that called for corrective action. Moving to the next amendment was number 7, adopted without objection. You will find that on page 4, lines 8 through 10. This was what we had referenced as the onboarding memo or onboarding amendment. Next was G9, which you will find on page 4, lines 24 through 25, which requires the department to provide information requested by the board in a timely and responsive manner. And then we close out with 4 amendments that were each adopted without objection. Those were amendment number 12, which is on page 5, lines 8 through 12, relating to the task force. The next amendment was number 15. This one is split up a little bit throughout the version O, 4 different locations, each having to do with the fact that the committee changed the name of the person leading the board to the Deputy Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities assigned to the Marine Highway System. So you'll find those references on page 3, lines 3 through 5. Again, that's page 3, lines 3 through 5. Also on page 3, lines 25 and 26. Another reference to the Deputy Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities. Also on page 4, lines 4 through 5. You'll see it there underlined in bold. Page 6, lines 19 through 20. Another reference to the Deputy Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities assigned to the Marine Highway System. Next, we have Amendment 18, and there are just this one and one more. This is related to the STIP, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. That is on page 2, lines 6 through 8. And finally, Mr. Chairman, amendment number 19, which in your packet was G20, related to the regional development organizations. You will find that paragraph on page 4, lines 11 through 21. Letter F. Page 4, lines 11 through 21. There were a few conceptual amendments embedded in there. I don't think that they're worth pointing out necessarily. And that concludes the explanation of changes.
Thank you, Mr. Stepp. Mr. Basner, we failed to notify you that we have 20 amendments for HB 123. So your bill will look like this CS when we're done with it. Are there any questions from the committee about the CS version O? Representative Vance.
Just a quick comment. After all those amendments, I expected like a 20-page document, and it's only 6. So I was like, wait, where'd the rest of it go? So I'm really proud of us for being able to get it all in there.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Seeing no other questions, I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection to adoption of the CS version O as our working document? Seeing and hearing none, CS work version / O is adopted. So this takes us to the CS before us and the outstanding amendments. And there are 4 that are going to be for the committee's consideration today. And all 4 have their origin in the previous hearing and were set aside. And I'm going to start with the two that are most straightforward. And the first is Amendment 0.4. And then the next, just so you can sort of have it in the on-deck circle, is 0.2. So let's start with 0.4, and that's from Representative Story. Representative Story.
Yes, I move Amendment 0.4.
I'll object for discussion. Representative Story, would you be able to give us a one or two sentence overview on a, I guess, what's a straightforward amendment?
Yes. From the comments from the board, I think we all agree that it's important that this board gets formed and gets to work quickly. And so it removes the January 1st, 2022 effective date, and the bill will now take effect 90 days after it's signed, which I hope is soon after it moves from this committee.
Thank you. Any questions for the maker of the amendment? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to Amendment 0.4? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment 0.4 from Representative Story is adopted. That takes us to the next amendment in the queue, which is from me, and that's going to be Amendment 0.2. I move, I'm going to term it Amendment Number 2, being the second amendment we're considering today. So I move Amendment Number 2, Work Order 0.2.
And I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Story. And this includes as a part of the comprehensive plan that it shall speak to strategic maintenance and vessel replacement, as we discussed in the previous hearing. Representative Coffman.
Consideration on this, I wonder if, you know, in looking at this, the way I would think where this would be parked is in the asset management plan at DOT level. Wherein the AMHS assets would only be part of that plan. So that's in an organization that owns assets, the maintenance and management of it is part of that. So the question I have is, does this exist somewhere already?
Let's turn to Deputy Commissioner Carpenter online. And Mr. Carpenter, would you be able to speak to what kind of long-term plans DOT or AMHS has for strategic maintenance and vessel replacement already?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. That's a great question. I know that Marine Highway does I don't know if they do strategic maintenance planning. I guess they do. It could be considered strategic in that they are planning annually on, you know, the vessel overhauls and long-term maintenance requirements for the system. So it does exist. I'm not sure it exists in a statute anywhere, if that was the question.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, through the chair. No, the question was not, is it in statute, was just, does such a management system already exist that would fit this purpose? Thank you.
I'm sorry, was that another back to me, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry. Yes, it was.
I think so. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
I don't know if a system exists. I know that the process exists.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along that lines, just to clarify, I'm unfamiliar with this, but who in the Department of Transportation oversees strategic maintenance and vessel replacement?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be Captain John Falvey, the general manager for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and he has a vessel construction manager as well who assists in that endeavor.
Follow-up. So with the passage of this bill and the creation of this board, how do you see future engagement with a proposed strategic maintenance and vessel replacement plan being communicated through the deputy commissioner to this board?
I'm just gonna jump in. So what the amendment would do is would say that plan has to be in the comprehensive long-range plan. So it would be a component of the comprehensive long-range plan.
Well, I guess my question is that since it's the general manager who is in charge of that plan, how is the communication going to take place with the board when it's the deputy commissioner who's in charge? And is there what kind of interface is going to happen that it can be a joint effort?
Deputy commissioner, are you able to speak to that?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I mean, the idea here, I think, is the deputy commissioner will be on the board, of course, working with the board on these strategic planning efforts. And the general manager for the Marine Highway System at this time reports to that deputy commissioner. So communication is ongoing. And I would envision, the deputy liaisoning between the board and the Marine Highway System and making sure communications are clear in all of the strategic planning efforts. And not to mention the fact that the Marine Highway System and their employees will be providing considerable information to the board in the effort of making these strategic planning investments.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the committee? Representative Story, do you maintain your objection?
No.
Is there any further objection to adoption of amendment number 20.2? Seeing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. And then this time I'm going to move amendment number 3, which is 0.7. So this is for the committee's reference, the 6-year term that we previously discussed. Is there an objection?
I will object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Story. And I just want to speak to a little bit of context. You'll notice 0.7 is kind of a high work order number for the 4 amendments before us, and that's because there was a previous work order. It was a little bit of a stressful 48 hours ping-ponging this back and forth with legal and trying to get to the proper iterations before the committee gaveled in. But we had previously discussed serving at the pleasure of the governor and the arguable merits of not, you know, having a new governor who hopefully, you know, has a Saturday night massacre or whatever and lets everybody go and puts in his own flunkies on the operations board. We hope that will never happen, but, you know, politics are politics. So it turns out that for non-regulation making boards, advisory boards, which ultimately this is, although I think we're trying to make it as robust as possible, there's not the constitutional ability to inhibit the governor from having the governor's appointees serve at the pleasure of the governor. So we could put that language in, but it would be constitutionally questionable. So this is just a clean 6-year term. I mean, I think there's still plenty of disincentive from, you know, turning the board over prematurely because it just is kind of food on your face, egg on your face, whatever the idiom is. There's those constitutional sidebars that we had to heed in the drafting of this amendment. But it's just a little bit of context for the committee's reference on this amendment. Are there any questions? Representative Vance.
I just want to clarify for the record that these appointees by the governor or by the presiding officers need not be confirmed by the legislature.
Representative Vance, that's a good question. Unfortunately, Sandin was double booked in this committee. We, Mr. Fisher from Legislative Legal, we wanted to have him, so I would turn to him for the authoritative answer. I confess I don't know offhand, maybe Representative Tardis. I'm just going to look to the back of the room if Mr. Crocker, Mr. Stepp might know the. Mr. Crocker is saving the day.
As I read the bill, Mr. Chairman, I'm not seeing where it specifies that. I could have missed it, but I just wanted to make that clear on the record what our intent is and if we need to add the language, if so. But Mr. Crocker could speak to that.
Mr. Crocker.
For the record, Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutes. Through the chair, Representative Vance, when we proposed the bill, we used the existing statute for the existing board. So, and they do not need to be confirmed. So I guess that's my answer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Further questions from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to say, if memory serves me, I think if we do want something, we put specific language in, subject to confirmation by the legislature, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think you remember better than me, but that would make sense. Any further questions? Representative Story, do you maintain your objection to Amendment Number 3, 0.7?
No.
Is there further objection? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment Number 3, 0.7 is adopted. And that takes us to the last amendment today. We're going to term Amendment Number 4. And actually, before I make a motion, I'm just going to clarify, because this was another sort of iteration legal ping pong game. There was amendment number, well, amendment 0.1 was distributed to the committee, and that's not going to be offered. And the sort of revision of 0.1 is 0.6, which we got just earlier today, and which I think all members are in possession of. And 0.6 basically provides that the performance measures that the ferry system has shall be communicated to the public in the media in a way that's easily available. So that's just 0.1 versus 0.6. 0.6 is what we want to look at. So with that, that's amendment number 4. I'm going to move amendment number 4, 0.6.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. And I think I kind of gave the background, but are there questions from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to understand, through the revisions in this bill, we went from just one long-term plan to short-term plan and then long-term plan. And then within that already established schedule, what this is saying is that as part of both of those, the board would identify these performance measures, and then those would be prepared and reported on an annual basis, the benchmarks for those performance measures. But not three separate things. It's sort of like, you know, the short-term document should bleed into the long-term document, but both would have these performance measures embedded in them. Does that sound, am I understanding it correctly?
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to take a quick at ease. thank you. We're back on the record and still connecting dots with recently received amendments in the CS. I was just taking the opportunity to sort of assess the intersection of this amendment 0.6 with the CS and also kind of look at the language to Representative Tarr's question. And so what I am going to do is move a before I'm going to do anything, Representative Kaufman.
One thought, you could put it in the intent section. And so you could, if you want to allude to things that may be beneficial but not, you know, require them as strongly, that would be one possibility.
Thank you. I think I might run with this in that I think the language, so the goal of this amendment is that the ferry system is reporting to the public how it's doing on the performance measures that are identified in the short and long-term plans, and just that kind of accountability to the public and to the media in terms of how the system is doing, whatever those performance measures might be that the operations board identifies. It could be on-time performance, administrative overhead, fare box recovery, goodness knows what else. I think because the language is pretty liberal, easily available, nobody's going to be taken to court for failure to meet that standard. I feel good with where this language is situated in the CS. Given those thoughts, what I'm going to do is I'm going to conceptually amend amendment number 4, 0.6, to delete all the language lines 8 through 15 and further to change the statutory citation on line 6 and delete 1965-180I, which is the language that's deleted in the second half of the amendment, and insert the statutory citation 1965-011, which is the section of the CS that describes the short and long-term plans that were adopted from Representative Kaufman's amendment. Are there any objections to that conceptual amendment? The conceptual amendment to amendment number 4 is adopted. So that takes us back to amendment number 4 as amended. Are there further questions or comments from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Mr. Chairman, I made the objection for purposes of discussion. I am happy to remove my objection at this time.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Further objections to amendment number 4, which is 0.6 as amended? As conceptually amended, I should say. Seeing none, amendment number 4, 0.6, as conceptually amended, is adopted, and that takes us back to the CS before us as further amended by these four amendments, 0.4, 0.6 as conceptually amended, 0.2, and 0.7. Are there committee comments on House Bill 63? Representative Kaufman.
I just feel like I'm supposed to say something about it at this point.
It'd be anticlimactic if you didn't.
Yeah. So other than that, no comment.
Thank you. Representative Klayman.
I just want to thank the chair for the extensive work that you did both with the bill sponsor and with other members of the committee. I appreciate all the effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Representative Story.
Yes, I would like to, Chair Christ Tompkins, thank everyone, too, for the report and bill that's coming out of here. I think it's going to really help with oversight and having all of us aware of the steps that we're taking to make sure that our marine operations, our marine highway system is working well, which is what we are all aiming for. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. Further comments? All right. Well, I'll just make a quick comment. I too really appreciate all the conversations, work, and contributions in the committee on this piece of legislation. Appreciate the leadership we have at DOT. I'm really I was excited when Rob Carpenter was appointed deputy commissioner, although Ledge 5 lost 20 years of DOT knowledge when that happened. But And I think this bill really speaks to the, I think, desire from Coastal Alaska that there's more involvement and oversight and direction and sort of, a sense of equity about the future of the system. And I'll just say, as you know, I'm excited that this bill is going forward. I really hope this is just a stepping stone to even more in exploration of a public corporation model. And I believe the sponsor also shares that perspective. But crawl before you walk, I guess you say. So with that, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report committee substitute for House Bill 63, version O, out of committee, actually, House Bill 63, version O, as amended, out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal notes.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the CS for House Bill 63, version O, as amended, is moved from committee and goes on to rules. Thank you very much, Mr. Crocker. And I neglected to thank you and the sponsor for all the work and for carrying this legislation.
Me too.
Please, yeah.
Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutes. Chair Christ Tompkins and the committee, Representative Stutes would like to thank the committee for their time and all their work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So, two items down on today's agenda, and that brings items 3 and 4. Item number 3, House Bill 123. Mr. Basner, any comments you'd like to make for the committee? We'll pull up our 20 amendments as you come forward.
Logan Basner, staff to Representative Zilkowski. No further comments, and look forward to your 20 amendments.
Okay, thank you. Well, we noticed public testimony, and so we will go there next. So at this time, I'm going to open public testimony. And we will go online. A familiar and welcome name, Mr. Joel Jackson and Cake. If you can hear us, welcome to the committee, and please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or fewer minutes.
Okay, thank you for giving me this time. To the chair and the committee members, for the record, my name is Joel Jackson. I'm the president of the Organized Village of Cake. I'm calling in today in support of House Bill 123. I'd like to take the time to say that the tribes in Alaska have not been recognized by the state. Everybody knows that. The state only recognizes tribes whenever they want tribes to work with them. Then they ask tribes to relinquish part of our sovereignty. This is unacceptable to ask this when the state doesn't recognize tribes. There are 229 tribes in Alaska providing services to all our tribal citizens. That is in the millions of dollars that we get from the federal government to provide services that would be otherwise paid for by the state. So it is time for the state to recognize tribes and work with tribes without asking tribes to relinquish part of our sovereignty. Like I stated, you know, it is time now that our tribes are recognized and the state to start working with us on a government-to-government basis. That's my comments for today.
Thank you very much, President Jackson. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, next online, Dolores Larson in Koliganek. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and proceed with your testimony in 3 or fewer minutes.
Good afternoon, members of the committee, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on this critical bill. For the record, my name is Dolores Larson, and I am testifying today on behalf of United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a tribal consortium in Southwest Alaska, whose mission is to protect the cultural cultures and traditional ways of life of the Yupik, Aleutic, and Dene Ena peoples. We represent 15-member tribal governments and over 80% of Bristol-based population. On behalf of UTBB, we offer our full support of House Bill 123, which takes a long overdue step for our state to formally recognize Alaska's tribal nations. Our tribe's inherent sovereignty should be recognized by the state of Alaska as it has been by the U.S. federal government. This recognition would allow our government to work together to better serve our shared citizens. For example, the many challenges the people of Alaska face when it comes to public safety, health care, education, housing, etc., would be better addressed through cooperative work of our government. It continued an intentional effort not to formally recognize the 229 federally recognized tribal governments is a tremendous disservice to not only tribal citizens, but all citizens of the state. Our tribe's inherent sovereignty isn't given to us by the state or federal government. Our rights to self-determination and governance long predate the state of Alaska, but formal recognition of our tribes by the state would be the first step in acknowledging that we are stronger when we work together for better futures for all Alaskans. On behalf of our tribal government in Bristol Bay, I urge you to please support House Bill 123. Koyana, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Larson, for that eloquent testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll go to next person online, Courtney Cardi in Dillingham. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in three or fewer minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Courtney Cardi, Chilun Tribal Council Administrator in Dillingham. Are you able to hear me?
Loud and clear.
Thank you so much, Chairman Christ Tompkins and members of the House State Affairs Committee for the opportunity to provide verbal testimony on House Bill 123 today. I provided testimony to the House Tribal Affairs Committee on April 1st and followed up with written comments via email. Today I'd like to echo those comments to the House State Affairs Committee. The Chilun Tribal Council is the federally recognized tribe of Dillingham, as listed in the Secretary of Interior's annual list of federally recognized tribes, issued in accordance with the Federally Recognized Indian Tribes List Act of 1994. We are the largest tribe in Bristol Bay with a current tribal roll of 2,919 citizens who live here in Dillingham, in other Alaskan communities, as well as across our nation and internationally. The majority of our tribal government services are provided through the Bureau of Indian Affairs Compact with the Bristol Bay Native Association. We currently authorize our tribal health care services to be provided through the Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation, although we have scheduled withdrawal from BBAHC and are working with the Indian Health Service to continue to improve tribal health care for the tribal health care delivery for the Native people of Dillingham. We are one of 17 communities who are members of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. The majority of our tribal citizens are shareholders of both the Bristol Bay Native Corporation and or Chogyung Limited. The Chogyung Tribal Council regularly works with the state of Alaska and the city of Dillingham in the areas of justice systems, education, transportation and infrastructure, as well as natural resource management. We operate an active tribal court with which works our BBNA ICWA team, the Alaska Office of OCS, the Alaska court system daily to protect our children. We partner with our local school district to incorporate cultural components into our classroom. This is done by allocating our annual BIA Indian education funding to the Dillingham City School District, working directly with students in the classroom and entering into MOAs or MOUs to apply for different grant programs which benefit Dillingham students. This year alone, we provided $311,000 to DCSD for COVID educational needs. We work with our municipality to collectively fund community infrastructure projects in Dillingham, utilizing our BIA tribal roads dollars, federal grant funds, and community block grants provided through our CDQ regional organization, BBEDC. We uphold our traditional role in the management of our lands, waters, fish, and wildlife by working with ADS&G and DNR to actively participate in research and the regulatory processes that govern our natural resources. We exercise our rights as Alaskans to engage in conversation and provide testimony to our lawmakers on matters that affect us as individuals, our community, and our tribal citizens. In conclusion, although we are just one tribe from Bristol Bay providing testimony on House Bill 123 today, we are not the most important. All of our region, as well as the state of Alaska's tribes, deserve to be heard and recognized as equal governments by the state of Alaska. We appreciate the opportunity to provide input and are grateful that HB 123 is being heard in the House State Affairs Committee today. We will continue to follow this legislation and provide input as the bill progresses.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Carty. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none and seeing no one in the room, I think that concludes public testimony, and I will close it now. As previously mentioned, there are no amendments received for House Bill 123 before the deadline yesterday, or after the deadline for that matter. Are there any committee comments before we entertain a motion? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank the testifiers for calling in and just sharing and the significance of this legislation, and I also have the opportunity to serve on tribal affairs. And I was just going to share that there were additional testifiers and added a little bit to the importance of this, and additional people shared personal stories. And I guess just as a listener, even though recognition exists federally and through the judicial system, you could definitely hear sort of the pain, I guess, of this ongoing issue that the state has not addressed. So I feel honored to have the opportunity to try and right that wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, last legislature had the privilege of sitting on the Tribal Affairs Committee and being a part of the very first opening of that committee ever in the state, and it was an incredible experience. And to listen to the history and the need for the recognition, it's definitely been educational for me, because I have less than 3% of Alaska Natives in my district. We do have a presence, but we don't see it and feel it as readily as you do here in Southeast. And so to gain a broader understanding of the need in the state for a long time to be recognized, and the tension that has existed between the state of Alaska, is something that I feel like it is a brave step. It's still not comfortable for me because I don't have a fuller understanding, but I'm taking a step of faith that this is something that is very necessary, as people have mentioned before, that there needs to be a healing. And in speaking with one of my friends who happens to be a tribal member, he said to me, tribes are sovereign whether we want them to be or not. And it was just the way he said it to me that it finally clicked in my brain. Conversations that I've had with people, that God is sovereign. He is God whether we want him to be. And that was a way that I could relate to the tribes being sovereign. They just inherently are. And it could only improve the relationship that the state of Alaska and its people have with the tribes, as the testifiers just mentioned, when we work together in that capacity. And this is obviously the very first step to that I hope we are able to look at this as a bright opportunity to move forward and lay aside a lot of the pain from the past. And I know that that's not easy, because I haven't been in that place, but I see that Alaska has such a bright future, and we know that we have to do it together because the First Peoples of Alaska are definitely part of leading that path. So I am very happy to be seeing this bill again, and pray that it makes it into law this year.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Any further comments from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. I really appreciate Representative Zilkowski bringing forward this overdue recognition of tribal sovereignty. I have had the privilege of raising my family on Occoquan land here, and I think this step in sovereign recognition is part of a long journey of healing and restoration. I hope we all realize the significance of this step in this bill, and that it will be supported.
Thank you, Representative Story. Any further comment? Seeing none, I'll make a quick note, which is really appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward and previous work from the last legislature as well on the subject. It's long overdue, and I think just an incredibly important statement of respect and partnership by the state of Alaska to the tribes, which I could not feel more strongly. And I grew up in Sitka, and we'd have our assembly meetings broadcast on the radio every other Tuesday night, and I was just kind of like, I don't know, listening to the Cubs game, you know, in like Chicago or something growing up. And I think it was like every third month there would be a government-to-government meeting with the Assembly of Sitka and Sitka Tribe of Alaska, just very normal. And I mean, not to say that that relationship has always been, as good as it should be, but it was just very normal, and it's always worked very well in our community. Sitka School District and Sitka Tribe of Alaska likewise would periodically meet in A&B Hall and meet with the Tribal Council. And I think this is really important to see the state government do that as well. So I'm really glad to see this. Well, with that, is there a motion? Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report House Bill 123, Version A, out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion to move House Bill 123 from State Affairs Committee, and I hope to the floor in ASAP fashion, carries. Thank you very much, Mr. Basner, and please pass on our thanks to Representative Zilkowski as well. And with House Bill 123 discharged, that takes us to the last item on today's agenda, which is House Bill 148, Alaska Coordinate System. Mr. Williams, would you like to make any comments to the committee? I have a number of geodetic questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Reese Williams, staff to Representative Laddie Shaw. I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of the bill sponsor and myself for hearing this bill, as well as Laura Ogan Boomershine from DNR for assisting our office with this legislation.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? And shocker, there were no amendments. So at this point, I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 148. There's no one online. I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any final comments on this piece of legislation? Seeing none, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 148, Version A, out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, House Bill 148 is discharged. Thank you, Mr. Williams. That concludes the four items on today's agenda, and I want to speak briefly to some amendment deadlines and housekeeping business. So as members may have seen, I think this has gone out by email, there is a doozy of amendment deadlines for next Monday at 5 p.m., and those amendment deadlines include apply to House Bill 102, which is the catastrophic insurance bill. It's my intent we'll take amendments and we'll discharge that bill on Tuesday. House Bill 157 from Rep. Rasmussen relating to APOC, recalls and referenda. House Bill 118 for a second time, second bite of the apple. That's my bill on recidivism reduction and prisoner rehabilitation. And I know we already are in possession of one amendment, and we're working with Representative Vance and Representative Eastman. But if you're inspired and want to throw more amendments at it, by all means, And then House Bill 5 from Representative Tarr, as we just heard earlier this week. I hope that Saturdays won't always be the norm. And so if this works for the committee, and please let me know offline if it does not, potentially on Tuesday hearings, kind of rolling past 5 p.m. to some extent, depending on the agenda. And I think our ability to do that may reduce the frequency of Saturday meetings. So just something to keep in mind. If that crosses bright red lines scheduling-wise for any of you, please let me know offline. But speaking of Saturday meetings, this Saturday we have scheduled House Bill 51, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, HB 124, relating to filling vacancies in the legislature. That's from Representative Carpenter. 51 is from Representative Josephson. And then the administration's bill, HB 95, relating to election investigations. So that's all on tap for Saturday. And I think that covers things. Seeing no questions, many thanks to Sophia with House Records and Tom in the back of the room, and huge thanks to Mr. Stepp, our committee aide, especially for wrangling House Bill 63, which was no small feat. We are adjourned at 4:32 p.m.